marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hear the people. Hear the people singing Bread and Roses. This is the Bread and Roses show, marching on a Friday in June, just a few days past the summer solstice. It's summer in the valley, rainy summer. My name is Elliot Tarry. I'm your host this Friday on this edition of the Bread and Roses show on WXOJLP 103.3 FM. That's on your FM dial and streaming live on valleyfreeradio.org. valleyfreeradio.org. You can get that anywhere you have a computer. And this is listener-sponsored. It is also independent media. That is, independent of the corporate media. And everything is volunteer down here. Almost everything is volunteer. We are very grateful for the last fund drive and everyone who donated. And we hope you keep us in mind again. Bread and Roses Show is a show devoted to a fair economy and peace and justice issues and environmental issues and labor issues and issues of import to the collective, to the commons. My name again is Elliot Tarry. I just want to put out a note that one of our co-hosts, Paki Whalen, is at this moment on a boat to Gaza. And we send our prayers out, as we did on the summer solstice when they left. I'll be talking a little bit more about that later. Paki, we hope spirit keeps you well. Today's show. In the wake of the summer solstice, where we celebrated the longest day of the summer, but the stillness and the sacred earth, the earth and nature, we're going to be talking about those that do not honor the earth, the coal industry in Appalachia. And what was going on this month, earlier in the month, was the march on Blair Mountain in West Virginia. That's Blair Mountain in West Virginia. And we've got an interview scheduled today with one of the organizers of Appalachia Rising. And this is Mickey McCoy, who joined us last year in the fall when he was marching and rallying in Washington, D.C. to stop the practice of mountaintop removal. I would just like to give a little background on the Blair Mountain and the labor history of Blair Mountain that this march continues. The Blair Mountain is in West Virginia, and it's a wonder of wildlife and natural diversity. It is also, however, rich in coal deposits and in the heart of coal country. 90 years ago, roughly 10,000 coal miners marched 50 miles to Blair Mountain from Marmot, West Virginia, because they were denied the right to join a union. They tied red bandanas around their necks and marched to throw out local politicians who were lined with coal companies. That sounds familiar. By some accounts, this is where the term redneck originated, from those red bandanas. When these miners reached Blair Mountain, they found coal company forces and state police arrayed against them. The standoff lasted several days and ended when federal troops would not only machine guns, but also poison gas and airplanes with bombs arrived on the scene. The Battle of Blair Mountain was one of the most significant events in labor history in the United States. Earlier this month, from June 4th through the 11th, a coalition of environmental and labor rights activists retraced the steps of that historic march, many wearing red bandanas, in a new struggle against King Coal.
it right. Well, that's our goal, and there ain't no way they can ever keep us down. Well, we've been shot, we've been jailed, Lord, it's a sin. Women and little children.
That's a sound from the Marchers. The March on Blair Mountain was organized by Appalachia Rising and was endorsed by some 70 organizations of diverse interests, ranging from environmental and economic justice to human rights and faith-based stewardship. And its focus centered on a controversial form of mining called mountaintop removal. In this process, the tops of mountains are blasted off to get at the seams of coal underneath. Overburden, the industry term for topsoil, trees, and rocks containing toxic heavy metals, is dumped into the valleys below, burying streams and finding its way into water sources while contaminating the drinking water of those who live nearby. Community members living near mountains permitted for mountaintop removal often choose to vacate their homes, rather than endure the adverse conditions, which also include increased flooding and poor air quality. A mountaintop removal site sits about 500 meters from the battlefield, the 1921 battlefield, and much of the rest is either permitted or in the permitting process. Candidate Barack Obama, in an effort to secure votes, called for an end to the practice, but as president, his administration issued new permits before putting a hold on some. In 2009, Blair Mountain was placed on the National Register of Historic Places, but 9 months later, it was removed by state officials. The officials claim that too many landowners objected to the listing, but others say the list of objectors is inaccurate and even includes two people who were dead. A lawsuit has been filed, and another chapter of Blair Mountain's contentious history has begun.
We're going to save Blair Mountain.
Yeah!
For 120 years, Appalachia has been oppressed by extractive industries. Industries that has kept us poor, kept us destitute, kept us in the dark, and kept us isolated.
Standing up, we're saying we're not going to be oppressed by anybody. Did you just notice that? You hear that when everybody here came up together with noise? We shook this mountain more than any mountaintop removal mine will ever shake about it. Yeah. We're shaking it right now.
Yeah. That's a voice of a young organizer and leader of the march. Unfortunately, I do not have his name, but extremely passionate in his beliefs, and so are all those that you hear in the background, chanting and dancing as they march. But mountaintop removal was not the only issue on the marchers' minds. They were demanding fair labor practices and a plan to create green jobs, leading to the development of a sustainable energy industry in Appalachia, beyond the extraction of coal. So who are these folks from Appalachia Rising? Well, they are a diverse group throughout the coal country. Many are descendants from the miners who marched and died in 1921. And there are leaders and spokespeople, such as Denise Giardina, a critically acclaimed writer of historical fiction, currently in residence at West Virginia State University. Giardina is an ordained Episcopal Church deacon, a community activist, and a former candidate for the West Virginia State governorship. And there's Terry Steele of Maydor, West Virginia, or Maydor, worked for 26 years as an underground coal miner and is a member of United Mine Workers of America, Local 1440 in Matawan, the largest United Mine Workers local in southern West Virginia. He is also a member of the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, also part of Appalachia Rising. Leader is Dr. C. Belmont Keeney, who is the great-grandson of Frank Keeney, president of the United Mine Workers of America in West Virginia from 1917 to 1924, and a leader in the famed 1921 march on Blair Mountain. He teaches history, sociology, and political science at Southern West Virginia Community and Technical College. Dr. Keeney has published two books, To Live Again, A Roman Myth, Recast in Contemporary Appalachia, and Defending the Homeland, Historical Perspectives on Radicalism, Terrorism, and State Responses. He has published several articles on the West Virginia Mine Wars and is currently writing a biography of Frank Keeney. And then there's Mickey McCoy, who is the featured interview on today's Bread and Roses show. And Mickey McCoy spoke to the marchers at Blair Mountain at a rally that was held after the five-day march. And we can hear some of that.
This is a march to save Blair Mountain. This is a march against mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
But this is a march for democracy.
Yeah.
Democracy ain't something you can put in a box and pull out when you want it.
Uh-huh.
It's participatory. You got to participate, and you're doing it today.
Woo.
You know, I recently went with a few of my brothers and sisters from West Virginia to the EPA, and we went up there and had a little press conference. And you'd be proud of a bunch of West Virginians.
Yeah.
They stood there, and they called out a bunch of people. They called out Nick Rahal.
Yeah.
They called out Rockefeller.
Right.
They called out a lot of people, every one of those so-called representatives. And I myself took care of Mitch McConnell. You know, I don't have to preach to the choir. You all know how mountaintop removal is killing people.
Yep.
These companies are killing people.
It's
murder, exactly, honey. For me, it's murder, and the companies should be charged with murder. And these representatives who are supporting mountaintop removal on a state and national level should be held and charged for accessory to murder.
Yeah!
That's Mickey McCoy, one of the leaders of Appalachia Rising, couple of weeks ago, speaking at a rally at Blair Mountain in West Virginia. The marchers went to Blair Mountain, the historic site, in order to save it. People were being asked across the country to write to President Obama and have it returned to the historical register to save it. And they're fighting for their lives down there. They're fighting really to save their homes and their lives against a rapacious coal company that does not value human life. So we called up Mickey McCoy to get his perspective on the march, and just want to let listeners know that this is the Bread and Roses show. And if you miss this show, if you're not listening at the moment, you won't get to know this. But for all those who might miss Bread and Roses shows, many can be found on our blog. That is http://. What a language. breadandrosesradio.wordpress.com. That's the blog that you can download many of the prior shows. And this one will be there soon. But without further ado, let's go to that interview now with Mickey McCoy of Appalachia Rising. Mickey McCoy is a former mayor of Inez, Kentucky, and a retired high school teacher, English teacher. Mickey is a leader of Appalachia Rising, a grassroots group in coal country opposed to fighting for their lives, actually, and against the practice of mountaintop removal. Last fall, Mickey led and spoke at a rally in Washington, D.C. to end that form of coal extraction. Mickey, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Good to be here.
Mickey, the last time we spoke, you had just arrived in D.C. and were preparing for the march and the rally the next day, not long afterward. The Obama administration's EPA made what appeared to be some concessions. What happened on that front?
Well, I would like to believe that the 3,000 people that took part in the celebration of the mountains and the fight for the people from Appalachia, and during that Appalachia Rising in late September, had a little bit to do with that. It was led by hundreds of Appalachian, Central Appalachia residents, backed by people from all over the country. I believe that our message to EPA was for them to, at that time, even during the march, we stopped in front of the EPA building, and the chant was, EPA, do your job, EPA, do your job. And I recently visited Washington the week of the Blair March, March on Blair Mountain, and a group of us went in and thanked the EPA for doing their job and just asked them to stay strong and keep on keeping on.
Well, you know, you folks at Appalachia Rising are really a model of organization. I got to really hand it to you. When I look on the website, but above and beyond that, in my mind, for the Obama administration to have reacted, they must have sensed a political threat. What does Appalachia got that other environmental groups or even anti-war groups don't have? Is it your heartland charisma? Seriously, what type of pressure do you bring to bear, and how do you gauge the EPA response?
Well, you know, I think what we have is compassion. We believe in this because it affects us. It affects our neighbors. You know, mountaintop removal is killing people, literally. And you know, with the carcinogenic heavy metals being blown out of the mountains, and then they make their way to our watershed, and especially the poor people. You know, I'm a retired teacher. I can afford to budget, which I have to do. Budget water is an itemized budget on my grocery list. It's there every time. My wife says, "What are you getting at the store?" I said, "Well, water, and what else do we need?" You know, but because we're trying to stay alive, and drinking the water from, whether it be from wells or whether it be from our reservoirs, which are fed by the poisonous waters, rivers that this mountaintop removal runoff feeds to, it's killing people. So I think at Appalachia Rising, we are bonded together by the compassion and the truth. I mean, you can't dispute. When you go to the website of the Center for Disease Control and start looking, you will find that the Central Appalachians have one of the highest rates, cancer death rates per capita, than any area in this nation. I mean, the science is already there, and more is coming each day. In West Virginia, for instance, I know of a study that all the results have not been released yet. It hasn't been final, but the people living below the blasting areas are dying of cancer. We're talking brain cancer. We're talking cancer of spleen cancer. We're talking not your typical types of cancer, everyday cancers. Kidneys have been removed from young men and women because they have been eaten up by cancer. So the science is there. EPA has convinced themselves that they're to rule, they're to make their laws and regulations by the science. Obama says he's paying attention to science. So we've got the science and the truth and the compassion working for us in Appalachia Rising. And even though we differ in several ways, we all can come together on this most important issue of ending mountaintop removal.
Hmm. The latest action was, of course, the march on Blair Mountain. You spoke quite passionately at the rally about the criminality of mountaintop removal.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. You know, there's people in this movement such as Bo Webb from West Virginia and Chuck Nelson and Maria Gano. And I mean, I hate to start naming because there's literally hundreds. But we look at this now. We have nothing to lose. This is killing residents of Appalachia. Besides just blowing the hell out of our homeland, it's also killing anybody that lives there. Now, and we have science to back that up. We have the record numbers of people in the funeral homes to back that up. And, you know, it's murder. And we're calling it that because that's exactly what it is. No longer are we writing sweet little letters to representatives who are in the back pockets of the King Cole anyway, people mm-hmm. like Nick Ray Hall from West Virginia, Manchin, who was the governor and now in D.C. Representing West Virginia, people like Hal Rogers of Kentucky, people like Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, our Kentucky governor here, who has sued the EPA along with the coal industry to get off our backs here in Kentucky. These people, if they believe, if they're backing mountaintop removal, that's what I'll tell your the people in your audience and the people, as I told at the EPA and as I told at Blair Mountain, it is black and white, it is simply murder. And if the representatives on the state and national level support mountaintop removal, then they should be arrested for accessory to murder. And that's the big boys in D.C., and state level, and right on down the line.
Well, as you're really going from environmentalism to murder, that's not, in this case, a leap. But there's also broader issues. The March on Blair Mountain was, of course, endorsed by some 70 organizations, including 350.org, the National Resource Defense Council, and the Rainforest Action Network. But the list includes a lot of non-environmental groups like the Center for Constitutional Rights, the Center for the Working Poor, labor unions, the United Church of Christ, United for Peace and Justice, the Anti-War Coalition. It's clearly an environmental issue, but also a civil rights, a human rights issue, and a criminal issue, as you're saying. Can you talk about those the broader issues that were addressed by the march?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I'm really happy that more and more church groups and organizations are coming out against mountaintop removal, because you know it is a it's destroying the creation. And recently, my wife and I spoke at Lake Junaluska at the Methodists have a compound down there. And it was a conference on creation, and we look at it, and especially my wife, who someday you got to call her and interview her, but she can go right through the Bible, listing and make a believer of the stewardship of this creation that that our Creator let us borrow, and the violation that mountaintop removal is to that stewardship of the land.
I'm going to ask you one more question. I'm going to let you go, Mickey. I really appreciate you being here, and just want to let the listeners know I am talking with Mickey McCoy from Inez, Kentucky, with Kentucky Rising and Appalachia Rising, organizing against mountaintop removal. And the march on, as I said, you folks were pretty well organized, but I'd like to explore that just a little bit. One thing that I notice when You go on the website. It's multi-generational with a strong youth movement. And with that, there's the tech savvy, the Twitter, the Facebook. But in addition to the new forms of communication, Appalachia Rising honors the tradition of storytelling. Can you speak about that? And how important is that to creating a movement? I'm speaking about on the website, they talk about narrative resistance. And there was a workshop before the march on Blair Mountain, a guide to storytellers and artists and documentarians. Can you talk about that?
You know, I wasn't, I joined the march on Saturday because I was in D.C. for 2 days during that week, calling attention to Blair Mountain, and hopefully that it would be I worried mostly about the safety, because these people, many of them young people, were in an area that could be dangerous moves right around the curve that they were marching in, and we were really wanting to make sure that Blair was safe, and also telling them about the march and in our little press conference before we met with the EPA. But, you know, the storytelling, you know, we come from an area that still treasures the oral tradition. I can tell you things about my family, about my great-grandparents, about my great-great-grandparents that were passed on to me by my grandmother. And so, you know, sitting on the porch with a bushel of beans and breaking beans so that we could can them, and all that time listening to the stories of the neighbors and of your family who had stopped by to help, it's instilled in you this truth of life, of why you're here, where you came from, you know, and who you are. And it pleased me that the movement recognizes that oral tradition. And, you know, and it's just like the songwriters who attended, and the musicians and the other artists, this is the spirit of a real movement. Being able to get to the root of life. And, you know, people are known, the human being is known through its arts, through its expression. And so we're just not writing speeches, and we're just not making telephone calls. But there's a great movement in the storytelling, and everybody's got a story, you know. And in Appalachia, it's really rich, and it's something that people outside of Appalachia can learn from us hill folks. It's a very peaceful thing to sit around you don't have to sit around the campfire drinking beer to have fun. You can sit around the campfire and listen, and then you can feel, and that feeling is so old, it's so tribal, and it just raises and feeds the spirit. So I'm glad to see that has become an instrumental part in the movement.
Well, Mickey McCoy from Appalachia Rising. Mickey, I'm honored that you took the time and are telling your story here for our audience. And as they say, may the force be with you. I wish you more power and success.
Hoka hey, my friend. Hoka hey.
Hoka hey. That was Mickey McCoy, an interview we did yesterday, actually, after he spoke at a rally at Blair Mountain in West Virginia. The struggle for Blair Mountain and the group Appalachia Rising is so inspiring. I am so admiring and in awe of this group. as I said to Mickey, not only are they very tech savvy in terms of how they organize on the web, but they are multi-generational and a lot of youth represented. If you go on their website, there's two. There's the blog. There's the website AppalachiaRising.org, and then there is the blog which they'll connect you to. The March on Blair Mountain. Now these folks marched for, they marched for 5 days, but they 5 or 6 days. The entire event lasted longer than that. It was from the 4th of June to the 11th. It ended in a rally up at the top of the mountain, and they faced arrest at that point, and they faced harassment all along the way. I know this not because I was there, but because their website allowed you to get updates on a regular basis. They called it the virtual march, and they had over 1,000 people that were following the march each day with updates. I guess on Twitter and throughout and emails and however you liked. And at the first evening when they had planned to camp at the state forest, they were denied, their permits were revoked, and they were denied that and put out an appeal to those on the virtual march, and within a day or a few hours raised I think something like $10,000 or more, so they were able to accommodate everybody and make arrangements for sleeping each night as they marched on the historic route that the marchers did took in 1921. And if you're just joining us, my name is Elliot Terry. This is the Bread and Roses Show on WXOJ LP 103.3. And if you'd like to call in, the studio line is 413-585-1033. And just want to continue just with a few more remarks on the Appalachia Rising Group. The just heard Mickey McCoy talk about storytelling as an important part. They ask everyone to tell their story and put their stories on their website and on their blog. And but just the concept, the different levels that they're dealing with in terms of a movement, not just environmental, not just to save their homes, not just to go up against the exploitation of the workers, but all of it and more, to come up with a vision of a sustainable future. This movement is powerful in its vision and powerful in its passion, and I'm impressed by the fact that the EPA made some moves in their direction. Hopefully they will continue doing that and will be able to save the earth. And that's an important level of this. There was a lot of religious groups and religious leaders that were part of this march, or religious people who have the convictions of spirit, not just Native American people and not just or pagan. There were Christian groups, Christian Church, the United Church of Christ, and the Episcopal Church, as we just heard, is Mickey McCoy's wife is a deacon. And the stewardship concept is very important to me, very important to them. This is very, very impressive to me. And then you have the other side, those that would be heckling them or threatening them as they march, and comments such as, just wait till their electricity is shut off. Now, that's something that you hear here and everywhere. Make it personal. Yeah, what are you going to do without electricity? If we don't destroy the earth to get that coal, how are you going to get, play your video game? Yeah, what about that? How are you going to get your pool or hot tub heated? Things like that, that are really not the point. And it continues to be the point, even among environmental groups who are trying to fight for alternative energy sources. The point is conservation. The point is a shift in paradigm. The point is to change from a paradigm of growth and exponential use of resources to a paradigm of conservation and reduction of the use of resources, even if it means a little suffering or changing lifestyle, like turning off the lights in Las Vegas, or how about not having so many night games at the base at the ballparks? How about half of them being day games like it used to be years and years ago? All right, they won't make as much money from sponsors, but these are the issues that they're marching for, changing the paradigm, saving their land, saving the earth, and I applaud that group, Appalachia Rising. I hope people check them out. And check out our blog, breadandrosesradio.wordpress.com. And for the interview we did last September with Mickey McCoy, that's on the blog. And right now, I would like to just play a song that celebrates the earth and the need to love our Mother Earth.
Who can give the mother? Mm-hmm.
That is good. That is, you know, there was a DJ in my youth that used to say, "That's so nice, I gotta do it up twice." You know, I think I'm gonna do that. And tell you who that is. That is a song variously called Mother Earth, Give to the Mother, written and performed by the students of IMA. That's the Institute for Musical Arts in Goshen, Massachusetts, under the direction of Evelyn Harris, formerly with Sweet Honey in the Rock, now a Valley resident, performing artist and teacher. You heard Evelyn on lead vocals as well. The school, IMA, run by Ann Hackler and June Millington. Great. This last summer, these students, inspired by the 13 Indigenous grandmothers, 13 Indigenous grandmothers who put out a call to not just love the Mother Earth, but to express gratitude and prayers for the cleansing of the waters of the earth in response to the Gulf oil disaster. Remember that? Well, they responded with this amazing song, the students of IMA last year. Students who wrote that song, students of the Institute for Musical Arts up in Goshen, Massachusetts, led by Evelyn Harris of the Valley right here. And That sort of concludes that section of this show, the show, Brendan Rose's show for today on mountaintop removal and the march on Blair Mountain. I'd like to turn to the other side of the globe right now just a little bit and talk about the U.S. boat to Gaza. As I said when I opened the show, our co-host, Pucky Whalen, is en route, is on a boat right now in the Mediterranean headed for Gaza. And along with some 50 others who are brave, nonviolent activists, nonviolent resistance activists from all over the country. This is a U.S. chartered boat, which is different. And it is part of a 10-boat flotilla effort to end the Israeli blockade of Gaza, which, of course, denies basic human rights to 1.5 million Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. There's, since the blockade began several years ago, there's 45% unemployment. And just up until the Arab Spring demonstrations in Tahrir Square caused the downfall of Mubarak, after Mubarak was forced to leave, the new Egyptian leaders opened up a way into the Gaza Strip, allowing men over 40 and under 20, and women and children to leave and go back and forth and get supplies and get the needed objects to survive. But it's still under a naval blockade. And that's since 2008, when the Israeli army invaded, you know, provoked, perhaps, as they always seem to arrange that, in my mind, in an operation called Operation Something Lead, or Fill Them With Lead, or something like that, which they just killed and through white phosphorus and destroyed something like 1,400 civilians and others. So a lot of the people on board this U.S. boat to Gaza were inspired by that horrendous act of war criminality. The name of the ship that Pucky and others are on is called the Audacity of Hope. Where have we heard that before? Of course, it Barack Obama's famous phrase in his book. And they are trying to bring hope to the people of Gaza so that their cargo on board is all of 3,000 letters of love and support from Americans to Palestinians. If anyone has an update on what it might have been happening, I looked just before I came in, but earlier today, but didn't see any news items on the flotilla. If anyone knows what the status is, and of course my prayers have gone out to keep the Pucky safe and others who engage in the spirit of nonviolent resistance. Passengers include, along with Pucky Whalen, author Alice Walker, of course, The Color Purple. Kathy Kelly of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Ray McGovern, former CIA operative and advisor to former President George H.W. Bush. And Anne Wright, former colonel and ambassador to, I believe, I'm not sure. She was an ambassador to Asia. Anne Wright, of course, been in many actions right here in Northampton, standing in front of the courthouse, side by side with our Alliance for Peace and Justice and the committee to stop the war in Afghanistan. She may have been an ambassador to Afghanistan, I'm not sure, and quit in protest and has gone coast to coast in organizing efforts and speaking out against the war. Robert Neiman of the group Just Foreign Policy is also on boat, along with, I believe the Center for Human Rights. I'm not sure if they are actually on it, but there are many, many groups and many people that have come out in support and held a rally in New York and sent those off to the boat, to the flotilla, to Gaza. Of course, the last year, the last boat and the last flotilla was met by Israeli troops, who stormed the boat, attempting to the boat that was then attempting to break the blockade. That's 1 year ago, killing 9 passengers and wounding many others. And of course, they claimed there were people on board that had guns. It was a Turkish registered boat with many Turkish peace activists and Palestinian support activists, and so the Israeli government felt justified in shooting, just coming on board and shooting. And we all know that story, and we all know that the Obama administration refuses to criticize, not only refusing to criticize at the UN, refusing to criticize the government of Israel and whatever they might do, and they have stated it publicly that they will not do that. It seems like they think it's a bit of weakness to have human principle. But they also are the main supporter of or supplier of the weapons, and the in the case of actions in Gaza and in Egypt, that protests that have injured people in the tear gas canisters and other things that are shot at the protesters. So that is the situation that Pachi is facing right now, and with the greatest spiritual force that most people could even hope for. So my prayers again go out to the flotilla, to Pachi Whelan, to protect her in this this effort. So we are coming towards the end of this edition of the Bread and Roses show. My name again was Elliot Terry. This is on WXOJ LP 103.3. We'll be going to Democracy Now! Fairly soon. I just thought I'd like to play another selection from, actually to go out with our, with Ann Feeney, who does our theme song, and take another song of hers about unions and the struggle against corporations. Ann Feeney.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more are gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
You know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. They can lock us out, they can lock us up. We cannot give in. No more. poison your water.
War on the worker.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the worker.
And when they foul up the air.
War on the worker.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the worker.
When they talk WTO.
War on the worker.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the worker.
Oh, that's a war on the
workers. War on the worker.
Oh, education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
All right, Aunt Feeney, brothers and sisters, this has been the Bread and Roses show for Friday, the 24th of June. Now, this made possible today, the show Bread and Roses, made possible by, let's spot down Aunt Feeney again there. Made possible by fate and good luck, and with production assistance from Mary Averill. So, right now, stay tuned for Democracy Now!